Okay, so today I'll be giving hopefully a very innovative presentation on wearable technologies for improving public health outcomes and decreasing health disparities. So the title of this presentation, as you see here, is Juxtope Implotip Wear Platform. And I'm going to go through these slides pretty fast. There are a lot of slides, but the information is very important. So if I go too fast, please slow me down. A little bit about myself. President and CEO of Juxtopia, as Tracy indicated. Did my master's degree in computer science at Howard University after doing computer science and cognitive neuropsychology double major at Oberlin College with a PhD in information technology from George Mason. Competed in various competitions. The X Prizes are pretty much worldwide international competitions, with the last, with one of the ones, Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize. So that was actually, you know, Star Trek Tricorder, non-invasively identify various diseases, just like Dr. McCoy, if you're Star Trek fans. If you are, then you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, you're like, what is this guy talking about? But the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize was a worldwide competition, had about 200 teams competing, and it got broken down, dropped down to 26. We're one of the 26 teams that actually resulted in the final. And so some of the things that I'm showing you on the slides are pretty much a reflection of that competition. On the team, we actually, you know, one of the things on public health disparity is economics, especially in low-income areas. So we made it a point to activate and train underrepresented minorities in the engineering fields to contribute to this innovation, which actually increases their skill sets and then leads to workforce readiness so they can get higher paying jobs and decrease economic disparities. Some of these are the sponsors, mostly in Maryland, with bigger names like Morgan Stanley and other local type of foundations. All right, so the painful problems. So as we know, health disparities adversely impact large portions of minority populations across the entire United States and also the world. The last point, eliminating health disparities potentially can reduce direct medical expenditures by $229.4 billion. So that's significant, especially when we talk about healthcare research, public health, population health, and we're impacting, you know, large populations across geographical areas. Often the measure of the effectiveness or healthcare efficacy is reduction of cost. So you can see that's pretty significant. Internationally, you know, I just made one point here that in Liberia, there's one physician for every 70,000 persons. That's a significant health disparity. So I don't even know how healthcare is really administered effectively in regions like that. All right, so why Imhotep? Quickly, on the left, that's good old Imhotep. That's ancient Egyptology. That's the reason why we named it Imhotep, because based on Egyptologists, Imhotep was the very first father of medicine and an architect. That's a little history lesson. On the right-hand side, that's the evil Imhotep from the movie. So every time I see the movie, understanding the history, that kind of like bothers me, so I figured I'd get out there. All right, so some of the solutions for healthcare disparities and how Juxtopia Imhotep is really addressing this disparity. So again, we activated 100% underrepresented minority students to develop a wearable technology platform. We trained them as JETs, Juxtopia Engineers in Training and Entrepreneurs in Training. And then we developed a wearable hardware and software platform to diagnose various conditions, from anemia to diabetes and many other conditions as well. And I'll get into more of the details later on. So there are two wearables, one for the consumer, two types of wearables, a wearable for the consumer or patient, a wearable for the healthcare provider, like a community health worker. So the goal is here, the conditions on the right-hand side, but it's to create a culturally adaptable, easily accessible and easy to use type of wearable device that then can be and also affordable to the target market group. first part of the process is evaluating what's already out there. So typically in multidisciplinary areas, when you're trying to develop products, it's often good to do a type of analysis. What's already out there in the marketplace? What's working? What's not? Does Fitbit do what it is? Can you cook and actually exercise and burn calories with the Fitbit? You probably can. And then how can you develop other things that really leverage the strengths and mitigate some of the weaknesses of the existing technology today? So this just gives you a visual of what we do. On the left-hand side, that's one of my industrial designers and then a mechanical engineer. Priya, the mechanical engineer, she runs the team. So we all listen to Priya. Second part of the process then is looking at how can wearable technologies be developed based on off-the-shelf software, off-the-shelf hardware components for early prototyping. In any product development environment, you have to do iterative prototyping, both on the hardware and the software. So Steve Jobs and I have the same birthday, February 24th, but he always has an industrial designer in everything he does to make things look aesthetically pleasing and emotionally appealing to the end user while also maintaining functionality. The second part of the process then is based on that, you come up with your own design. So this is what our team has done. After needs analysis and talking and doing focus groups with target market end users, what do people want? How they want to use the technology? How they want to wear it? When would they like to wear it? And how often can the data be extracted for interpretation by IoT or, subsequent data analysis? This is another diagram that's more detailed. Can't see a lot of details on the left-hand side, but it goes, from analysis of what exists in the marketplace, what can be pulled off the shelf to prototype, and then how can you do the hardware a little bit more detailed from printed circuit board design to the material that's used for the band, so forth and so on. And so in this platform you see right here, this is one design. So it's you see it has a micro display, mini battery, mini temperature sensor, the GPS, the transceiver, and the optical sensor. Now, we hypothesized that the optical sensor, like a near-infrared spectroscopy, that can non-invasively and transdermally look at biomarkers running through the radial artery to determine an illness and injury, probably can do it. So it seems like a simple solution, but oftentimes simple solutions are the ones that work. And it's true that, with biophotonics, we have the capabilities of doing that. So what ends up happening, just like anybody here know about protein crystallization or near-infrared spectroscopy for any chemical engineers or chemical scientists, or undergraduate when you were doing your chemistry, you can probably utilize that device to non-invasively identify a chemical marker. And that's what, we started to realize today. So at the bottom, you'll see a federation of database or data stores. And then you have a biomarker service, the location service to determine where the individual is, a cultural service to provide information and feedback that's culturally relevant to the wearer, and then, of course, vital signs service to do, the blood pressure and all the vitals that need to be tracked and then displayed as well. So the G-band platform then, in this case, the intent is to monitor disease conditions and display digital patterns on the band when indication of conditions are detected as abnormal or adverse, and then wirelessly transmit this to a care provider. Also on the data side, a wearable technology is almost like a data collector and a panacea for data collection, such that you have each individual as a data point. Hundreds of thousands or hundreds of millions of people become huge population points. Continuous data gets into terabyte and the petabyte of information. Now we're getting to big data, and then the big data needs to be interpreted. From that data, various trends can be created. Analysis and data and analytics can be derived to determine what the patterns of diseases are or conditions. Now, healthcare provider. So this is a little picture of me in one of my labs. We So before Google Glass came out in 2005, we invented a fully integrated optical see-through display from a National Science Foundation grant, so that we could improve human performance. So I'll go through a little bit of that. If you don't know about augmented reality is projecting digital information that's superimposed over real-world objects. So in the case of optical see-through display, you wear regular glasses, like I wear contact lenses, otherwise I'd be wearing glasses, and imagine now that you can perform a clinical procedure and then see the step-by-step instructions or landmark on where to stick a 14-gauge needle in response to a tensor pneumothorax, because needle decompression is the clinical type of activity that you would do. So we did this, we tested this type of technique utilizing combat medic trainees, or EMTs, and needle decompression is the second leading, tension pneumothorax is the second leading cause of battlefield mortality, and oftentimes EMTs have to do this in austere and extreme environments. So if you're suffering from a penetrating trauma and an EMT is not there, then the idea is that a community health worker could actually put on augmented reality goggles and perform the same clinical procedure, saving the person's life. It's an easy procedure, which I'll go through a little later. I can show you, I guess, this has internet access, right? So you can't really hear the speaker, but what ends up happening is that this is an old video. This is a 2010 video demonstrating augmented reality. And what ends up happening is that there is someone's wearing the glasses, and then projected in the glasses is a pictorial mnemonic. Why pictorial mnemonic? Because it helps to for a human being to recall that information on a procedure. So it's empirically researched as a mnemonic strategy for task performance. A needle decompression is a four-step procedure. The first step is to, trying to let you hear the video as well. Oh, it's almost over. Yeah. The hardest part of a needle decompression procedure is sticking a 14-gauge needle in the second or third intercostal space. We studied this and evaluated, this across first and second year medical school students. And oftentimes, even if they're in medical school, individual gets to that step in the procedure, he or she's asking questions mostly of where to stick the 14-gauge needle. Can you imagine a battlefield or in an austere environment and you don't have those skill sets and, the patient is asphyxiating. In 60 seconds, mortality hits. So this is how augmented reality can really have some So some of the results, goggles, no goggles, control group, experimental group, standard practice. So with a goggle group, pretty much accuracy and time, accuracy was increased, time was decreased by utilizing the goggle intervention. On the procedures, step one is to apply antimicrobial strobe. Step two is to apply the 14-gauge needle in the second or third intercostal space. Step three is to catheter, and then step four is to listen to the breathing sounds. And step two is the hardest part of that procedure. As you can see, with completion, assistance decreased with step two, but the time really didn't change that much. But the need to ask the preceptor on how to perform the task actually decreased with that type of intervention. So overall, goggles being used actually improved performance in this case. So it became, in this case, wearable technology became a cognitive assist. Many community health workers don't have all the expertise needed to perform various clinical and life-saving tasks, and often need cognitive assist. And this is one of the reasons why we chose a pictorial mnemonic strategy in order to help facilitate and improve human performance on a clinical test. So what are some of the features? The ability to do video conferencing with our remote experts, the ability to step-by-step, display step-by-step instructions to the wearer, to create contextually an overlay of real-world objects and digital annotation. And then also what's important is the documentation of the procedure. So with this type of software that we created, that the students actually created, I didn't really write that much code. But the students, they created a module or software algorithm to document the procedures as the procedures are going along. Why? Because that usually is post-operative and takes time, and a lot of times it's error-prone. But if you're doing it in the context of the clinical procedure, you can decrease a lot of time and a lot of errors in it. On these pieces, no pictures, please, right? So I gotta make that disclaimer. No cameras, no cell phones, things like that. Alright, so this is an exploded view of the hardware. This is what a student actually did, our industrial designer. This is an exploded view of an open system, unlike what Apple will do. Apple would actually do closed systems. We do open systems so that anybody could actually develop wearable augmented reality at lower cost, and making it affordable and usable to a healthcare provider, for example. So this has a printed circuit board, battery, three camera arrays, and the choice of the optical components in a modular fashion for specific fields of use. And I'll show why that's important, because a community health worker may only need one camera for video conferencing. A combat medic needs three cameras to do registration, to put the landmark on the second or third intercostal space, to which to put that 14-gauge needle. And many different people, many different types of occupations only need certain components, and therefore that's why the platform approach is chosen. These are other views of the head melted display. Now, on a needle decompression procedure, this is the four-step process. What you would look at if you were wearing the goggles performing a needle decompression procedure. That's a response, again, to attention methorex. So, again, this happens in anesthesia a lot of times. You have penetrating trauma, stab wounds, sometimes gunshot, and paramedics are the ones that really do the needle decompression procedures. If a paramedic is not at the scene, a fixation happens very fast and someone goes into mortality. So it's an easy procedure, as you see right here, a four-step procedure. And oftentimes, we think that if a community health worker or someone else has this type of device, then lives could be saved that otherwise would not be saved because of time for healthcare providers to get to the scene. All right, so a little bit about the team. So I'm going to start bragging about my team a little bit, if you don't mind. Okay. Michelle Hatley, she's actually the technical team lead of students that pretty much implemented what I just presented. Dr. Ken Wilson is the lead trauma scientist. He works at Hurley Medical Center. He used to work at Morehouse School of Medicine, and he also is a combat surgeon. Dr. Peter Gassenzidis, we just secured a grant together to advance augmented reality for combat medics on the battlefield, and together we defined the requirements on how all combat medics on the battlefield would use augmented reality now and in the future. Toks Fasholis, he's our lead external evaluator, so when we're making sure the intervention does what it's supposed to do beyond the fluff or the lab environments, but really the practical research, what we consider translational research, she really keeps us honest. Chelsea Manners is a computer engineer. So she's an undergraduate student at University of Houston. and her focus is on advancing the computer technology that's within both the wearable technology in the wrist for a body-worn device and also on the headset. Brandon Anderson is one of the software engineers. He just graduated from DeVry University with computer science, and he also helps with, you know, the client-side type of software, over-the-cloud, quote-unquote, software algorithms. Priya, again, is our mechanical engineer, so she looks at how to develop a human ergonomically friendly wearable device on the body somewhere, and how can that be worn comfortably and also functional and have that emotional appeal to the end user. The industrial designer type of individual was Steve Jobs' favorite because it created that type of emotional appeal to the end user, especially for consumer devices. So very talented young man, and you saw his work up on the screen before. We also have students who are entrepreneurs because now, there's something about getting research dollars from NIH and DOD to conduct research and put it on the shelf. There are other things about taking that research and translating it to someone can use. So young entrepreneurs like Darius look at the target market analysis, the SWOT analysis, market penetration strategies, how to make this very low cost while functioning and not falling apart, and working with mechanical engineers. So he has several hats and making sure that this is translational research and that can be used for the target markets and end users. One of our G-band distributors is Mohammed. And he's creating this type of sports game called Tech Sports so that, you know, children who are wearing these devices can run through an obstacle course and improve and test their physical fitness abilities as well as their intellectual abilities by facing STEM challenges. Very innovative work. And he's going to be applying for an NIH grant pretty soon to really evaluate this this intervention. You see Jets and Jedis. These are my naming conventions. Because Star Wars are coming out. You know, before Jet, there's a Jedi. All right, this things we do internal to actually motivate students. All right. So Jamal Henderson, he's a, quote, a juxtopia engineer dedicated for improvement. So he's a Jedi. And he's looking at how the G-band can actually decrease occupational-related health injuries in various austere and extreme environments. So again, one platform, choosing requirement and optional components of that hardware technology platform for a specific target use. And I'll talk a little bit about the future. Hopefully I'm still within my time frame. So, all right, the future of the Juxtopia MOTEP OpenWear platform, and I'll show a video. This isn't on the internet, so let's see if this pulls up. Sorry about this, guys. Having some difficulty. All right. Yeah, it's sideways, but what John is doing, we receive requirements from the Department of Defense from the people who deal with special forces and CIA, FBI, and three-letter agencies. But we decided that this type of technology can also be used for doing surveillance for, like, human trafficking officers, ICE, or DHS, and then, you know, utilizing different type of human-computer interfaces to do something that's very stealth, kind of inconspicuous, and actually can help obtain video or other type of artifacts that help to make decisions on how to apprehend. So that's one of the areas of the future of this. Some of the other research we've done is working with NASA. So we're funded by the Center for Advancement of Science and Space to improve astronaut performance using wearable technology. And this is some of the research that we've done before. This one actually hit Discovery magazine with, you know, space diving. Just that was just fanfare a little bit, but the implications of wearable technology in space for long-term missions. And HIT, we were the very first ones, I guess, to look at the International Space Station as a small population. You have six to seven people there 24/7 doing work because it's a federal lab, and they have healthcare needs. They have to exercise, otherwise you have bone atrophy, and then that's only in microgravity environment like ISS. Long-term missions, like we're going to the United States for Mars missions, where there's no command and control after a certain amount of miles, and there's a 20-minute delay, how can you deliver healthcare? If there's an injury, how can you do it? And oftentimes, there are injuries. So, you know, we're looking at how to really improve human performance in those austere and extreme environments utilizing wearable technology. So, in conclusion, we demonstrated and also completed a lot of feasibility studies on how wearables can improve public health, decrease public health adverse outcomes, and really address the needs of health disparities with affordable, easy to access, easy to use devices that are culturally adaptive to the population that will use it. Thank you.